individual is a monk or nun, there are certain restraints coming from the monastic vows, which proscribe the individual from leading a certain life of comfort or life of luxury. For example, strictly speaking, a monk is not supposed to own more than one extra set of robes. So there are certain strictures like that. But if the individual is not a monk, and there are no strictures coming from the monastic codes, if someone has been very fortunate and has great material resources, from a Buddhist point of view, this is seen as fruits of his or her positive karma in the past. So right livelihood has no immediate connotation of simplicity versus luxury. Among the followers of the Buddha, there were royal members of various kingdoms. I feel that the Buddhist stand on the issue of wealth really has more to do with the mental state of the individual who owns the wealth and who earns it. There is an emphasis on training one's mind so that you will have no sense of possessiveness or miserliness on your part, that you are able to fully transcend any sense of possessiveness. And as for the wealth itself, there are some scriptures where there is an explicit statement that for a bodhisattva, so long as there is a clinging, then even to own or possess a single coin is sinful, is unethical. But if the bodhisattva is free of clinging, then even to own great material resources is not incompatible with the ideal. So this seems to suggest that it is really the state of mind and the means by which you create the wealth that seems to be more important. In thinking about the Buddhist texts, all the excellences of human existence, such as material affluence and so on, probably from the Buddhist point of view, are not something to be discarded. Also in regards to this, there is, in one of Nagarjuna's texts, a discussion of four legitimate human pursuits, two goals and their corresponding means of attainment. One goal is material fulfillment, and the means for that is creation of wealth, which today would include the accumulation of the most powerful US dollars. The second goal is the attainment of liberation, and the means for that is spiritual practice. So, this is the Buddhist view.
The Dalai Lama's position was clear. Our attitudes about money are more important than the amount we make. As always, in our pursuit of happiness, our inner resources assume a greater role than our material resources. Unless, of course, we exist in abject poverty and are suffering from hunger or starvation. We had spoken of those who are slaves of money, those for whom pay or salary is the prime consideration in their work. While this is true of many, there are clear signs that this may be changing. In his book Authentic Happiness, Martin Seligman, Ph.D., one of the key figures in the study of human happiness and the field of positive psychology, states, "Our economy is rapidly changing from a money economy to a satisfaction economy." He asserts that personal satisfaction is rapidly gaining on financial rewards as the determining factor in many individuals' choice of work. He points out, for instance, that law is now the highest paid profession in America. Yet for many, money alone is no longer enough to entice individuals to enter and continue the practice of law. In fact, the major New York law firms now spend more on keeping their staff than on recruitment, as many attorneys are abandoning the practice of law for other kinds of work.